You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Reveal. Zika virus already has spread swiftly around the island territory of Puerto Rico, and now Miami is reporting the first cases of Zika and people infected by local mosquitoes. This week, Reveal takes us to the front lines of the battle against Zika. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, you may have already gotten used to the sight of people staring at their phones as they walk through a park with a look on their face that might make it seem like they're searching for some kind of treasure. And they probably are if you consider catching Pokemon, finding treasure. Pokemon Go, a game that can be downloaded onto smartphones, was launched less than a month ago. It's become the latest gaming craze with millions of users. The app is considered a location-based augmented reality game that uses your phone's GPS to blend the fictional and the physical in a very digitized world. Pokemon Go, that's new, but the idea of creating games that fit perfectly into the spirit, culture, and technology of a time, that's not new. In fact, board games, toys, role-playing games, computer games can say a lot about the time and environment they came out of. Here with us now to talk more about how games have evolved through history is Matt Forbeck. He's an award-winning and New York Times bestselling author and game designer, and he's based in Beloit. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. It's a lot of fun.
Well, let's start with this Pokemon Go. I haven't played it myself, I'll be honest. My kids have. But how did this get so big? Did it just capture the latest technology in a way that grabbed people?
I think part of it is that you had a lot of millennials that have grown up on Pokemon. Pokemon is over 20 years old right now. And there's been a lot of pent-up demand for having Pokemon on something other than a Nintendo DS or the Nintendo Wii U. And this is the first time you've seen a really good Pokemon app come out for any kind of smartphones. And now that means that everybody who loves Pokemon from when they were a kid, and a lot of kids too, can now play it on whatever smartphone they happen to have in their pocket.
Now, am I reading too much into it, or is this? Can we look at this as a symbol? The smartphones or technology are more and more integrated into our lives, and this is a game that really surfs that wave?
It does. I mean, it's not only just integrated in our lives, but actually encourages us to go outside, which is amazing. I no longer have to ask my kids to go walk the dog anymore, which is fantastic.
They do mind the dog, though, not chase after Charmander or something.
Exactly. The dog is exhausted by the end of the day. I have to give it to him.
All right. Well, that's doing the job. Now, we didn't want to just talk about Pokemon Go. Can you talk about some past waves of games that you think really meant something about the time? Going back to war games, maybe in the 1950s.
Yeah, you could even go further back than that to the 1913 when H.G. Wells actually published a game called Little Wars, which is all about playing with little toy soldiers, little tin figures or metal miniatures. And that was one of the first examples of that. In the 1950s, we had war games, which were the little games with hexagonal maps on them and little tiny chits that showed you the tanks and the movement of all sorts of different formations, like tactics, too. After that, in the 1970s, we had a game called Dungeons & Dragons, which most people are familiar with these days, that launched the revolution of role-playing games. In the 1990s, we had the collectible card game revolution started by Wizards of the Coast with their game Magic the Gathering, designed by Richard Garfield. And Wizards also happened to be the first American publisher of the original Pokemon card game.
Hmm. Yeah, let's talk about some of the culture behind those. And actually, maybe go back a bit further to the Landlord game, a version of which, maybe a ripoff of which, came to us down the ages as Monopoly. That's one, you know, maybe it's not at the front of people's minds now, but this became one of the first board game phenomena.
Yeah, Monopoly, my friend Mary Pallon actually wrote a great book on this called The Monopolist that covers the entire history of Monopoly. And it was a New York Times bestseller last year or the year before. But Monopoly is one of those games that's become literally the best-selling board game of all time. And it definitely was a ripoff, actually. A man stole it from the original designer and sold it to Parker Brothers, who then is now a part of a Hasbro, the large conglomerate that is actually the largest game publisher in the world. And it's a great game for breaking it out and playing around Thanksgiving and such. And a lot of people still love it to this day. But I think most people love it because of the nostalgia and because it's just a tradition to give it to people over the holidays as opposed to being able to actually play it. On average, most copies of Monopoly are played less than once, I've been told, by people at Hasbro.
Because of maybe the family arguments that break out over Thanksgiving, over who's minding the money.
Oh, it probably saves a lot of trouble, right? There are so many much more better games out there nowadays. I actually have a very long rant about how Monopoly is the worst game that everyone has played, because by the time you've gotten 15 minutes into the game, you realize who's going to win. And over the next 4 hours, then, you get to watch that person pound everybody else into the dirt. And that's not really everybody's definition of fun these days.
Well, I want to talk to you more about board games in a bit, but I want to key in on Dungeons & Dragons a little too, because that seems like one that really fit the time, for better or worse. Have you had a whole generation of people who'd grown up reading The Lord of the Rings and other fantasy novels? So maybe that's why it was successful. But then there was all this anxiety about Dungeons and Dragons in the 1980s and a huge backlash. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, there was a huge backlash. It was very much because, like a lot of things in fantasy and in heavy metal music of the days and all that kind of thing, there were elements of demonic themes and imagery in the games, right? And mostly you were fighting these characters. You weren't trying to worship them or anything. But there were groups like Bothered Against Dungeons and Dragons that said, geez, this is leading our kids into demonology, which was ridiculous, obviously. But it was something that caught headlines and caught a lot of attention. There was also the incidents with Dallas Ebert, who was disappeared in Michigan State, supposedly playing Dungeons and Dragons in the steam tunnels underneath the school. But it turned out that was just a theory that was manufactured by a private investigator that had been hired by his family to find him. And the poor guy was actually found many months later in, I believe, down south in New Orleans. And he basically just had a nervous breakdown and just disappeared. But because his family was concerned about him and the investigator wanted to try to explain it, they came up with this cockamamie theory about what had actually happened.
And ultimately leading to a Tom Hanks movie.
Exactly. It was actually Tom Hanks' first leading role, believe it or not.
We're talking to author and game designer Matt Forbeck about games, how they fit our culture, feed into their time. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite game of all time? Board, role-playing, computer, social media, what have you? Is there a game that you associate with your childhood, a game maybe that you're playing now? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. And Matt, let's get into those board games that are better than Monopoly. This, starting about 20 years ago, there's a huge explosion of board games coming, I think, from Germany originally.
Yeah, actually, there's a big gaming convention in Germany in the town of Essen called Spiele, which is the largest, which was up until recently, actually, the largest gaming convention in the world. Recently, Gen Con, which takes place in Indianapolis, which was just last week and has overtaken it. But the Germans have a longstanding tradition of bringing games down to the pub with them for entertainment in the evenings. So they would literally just bring a game down to the pub, sit there, drink beers, and play for a couple hours. And they were generally very simple games that didn't involve a lot of fighting or direct confrontation. And that kind of thing seems to have really caught on with American audiences in the last 20 years. We now have gaming pubs and gaming cafes and all sorts of other places, events at libraries, where people can just come and play games with each other and kind of have a good time. And I think in a day when we have a lot of electronic engagement with people on, say, Twitter and Facebook and whatever else, people really find it refreshing to sit down across the table from each other and have some actual interaction.
And you are a game designer based in Beloit, and Wisconsin has a pretty strong connection to a lot of the games we've been talking about. Can you talk about the Wisconsin tie here?
Yeah, it's a huge connection, actually. Dungeons and Dragons was originally developed by two gentlemen. It was Gary Gygax out of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and Dave Arneson out of Minnesota. And the company that began publishing it was TSR Hobbies, which was located in Lake Geneva for decades. And I often joke that one of the reasons is because it's so cold around these parts of the country that the only thing you could do in the middle of winter was to sit down and hunker down and play games.
We're talking to Matt Forbeck. He's a best-selling author and game designer, and we're talking about how games, analog and digital, can reflect the time we're living in. And we want to hear from you. What popular games or lesser-known games are you playing now, maybe right now as you're listening? What do you love about them? And we're talking board games, computer games, role-playing games. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tell us what games you played growing up, what games you're nostalgic for. Do you think that they were games that fit their times, for better or worse? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll be back with the conversation and maybe with you here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We are talking about games. Games like Pokemon Go that maybe capture something about the time they came in. Games that become phenomena, crazes, or lesser known games too. Matt Forbeck is with us now. He is from Beloit. He is an author and a game designer himself. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a game that defined your childhood or teen years, or maybe your favorite game nowadays? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. Austin is with us in Madison. Austin, hi.
Hi. I'm 24 years old, and a genre that I think defined my childhood and early teens is real-time strategy. I played a lot of Age of Empires, StarCraft, StarCraft II, and still popular today are Dota 2 and League of Legends in that category.
And Austin, do you go back and play the exact ones you used to play, or do you play the new incarnations of the real-time strategy genre, and do the new ones stack up against what you remember?
I played Dota 2 for a time, which was a good game, but at this point, I don't play any of these games. They're too time-consuming for my life now.
Gotcha. Real life gets in the way. Austin, thanks so much. And Matt, it's kind of like music sometimes. The games you discover in your teen years have a special place in your heart.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's when you have the time to spend the most time on these things, right? When you're in high school and you just have those crazy afternoons and lazy weekends when you can just really dive deep into these things. And later on when you get busy and you have a job and kids and everything else, it becomes harder and harder to do. But I think that's one of the reasons that games these days, particularly tabletop games, often are games that you can play them in under an hour, actually, as opposed to having to spend entire days or entire weekends to do it. If you want to go deep into it, you can certainly play things that last you for 12 or 18 hours or even months or weeks or years, but most of the time you can pick up a game that you can play in under a half hour, which is fantastic.
Austin, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nancy in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your game?
Well, I was going to say, too, Mastermind and Battleship, and you know, I grew up in the 70s, so those were my favorite two games.
Nancy, thank you so much. Yeah, you sunk my Battleship, and I remember the Mastermind cover with that suave-looking fella on the cover, Matt. Those are your basic, you know, pull them out, learn them pretty quick, and play them with other people. Do you have a good kind of quick-to-learn games like that that are still fun, Matt?
Yeah, those are classic games of deduction, right? And there are a lot of great games like that. A new one that came out recently was called Codenames,
yes,
which is one of whole bunch of
awards. Just got that myself, yeah.
And Mysterium is a fantastic new game, too, that almost was nominated for the Diana Jones Award last year. And there's another great game out recently called Pandemic Legacy, which is all about how disease spreads across the globe. And the legacy variant of it is something where you can actually link up separate games of it to play it over a 12-month period. It's absolutely fantastic.
I've heard of that. I have not. I've played the original Pandemic, but not that one. That sounds like a good one. But Codenames, that's a quick learn, and that you don't need to be a gaming nerd to get into that one.
No, exactly. And Apples to Apples is another one that's actually designed originally by a group of people out of Madison, Wisconsin,
and was then
sold to Mattel. So.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Elizabeth on the line in Whitewater. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi. So my game is called Undertale. It is a retro RPG that doesn't require you to kill and gives you a choice on whether or not you want to be a pacifist or go the classic route of RPGs.
And that's called Undertale, Elizabeth?
Yeah.
Undertale, thank you so much. Not familiar with that, but an RPG, she says, a role-playing game. A knock sometimes, Matt, on role-playing games is they're all about killing, even in the name of good things. This has a pacifist option.
Yeah, it does. It's actually a PC game that came out on Steam, and it's fantastic. It's wonderful because a lot of the games you play from that era require you to just slaughter everything that moves, and this actually talks to you about what does it mean to slaughter everything. I mean, is there a way to actually show empathy for people and to talk to them about problems and see if that can actually help you work them out instead? My kids have been playing this game, and they've shown it to me, and it actually sat me down and forced me to play through it, too. It's absolutely wonderful, though. It's a wonderful game.
That sounds great. Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing that. We are talking about games, games of our childhood, games of our adulthood, wherever we are now, board, computer, role-playing, you name it. Keep sharing yours on the Central Time Facebook page or 800-642-1234. Author and game designer Matt Forbeck is with us. Back to our callers now, Jason in Toma. Jason, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What was your game, Jason?
In middle school and a little bit in high school, I played a lot of Pog, which is like marbles,
mm-hmm,
but you stack them up vertically. It's a really cool game because it's fast and it's highly portable, and I think that was the big thing about it.
Jason, thank you so much for that one. And a collectible too, Matt, and that's a lot. You mentioned Magic, the card game earlier,
right.
The Pokemon, obviously. That collectible angle of the games can make them a little bit addictive.
Yeah, that's actually been an issue with these games over the years. I mean, it's fantastic when you're trying to sell them, right? But when you're trying to keep your kids from buying them, it becomes something else entirely. But the idea that you can open up a pack of cards and get something rare that you can then turn around and sell on eBay or trade with your friends, that's kind of got its own draw to it, right? And that's something that you see a lot of free-to-play computer games out nowadays, whether they're on your iPhone or whatever, on your PC, and a lot of those work on the same mechanism. We call it a variable reward system, where if you do something, you might get, you know, just a little bit of maybe a few gold pieces, but it's always possible you might get the +5 Holy Avenger drop in your lap instead. So that encourages people to keep coming back and playing and playing and playing. It's kind of a gambling technique that they use.
I'll go next to Katie on the line in Wausau. Katie, hi.
Hi. My favorite game of all time is called Dutch Blitz. It's a really fast-paced card game. You can have multiple people playing and laying at the same time, and sometimes you almost lose friendships because you get so mad that someone lays the card you want to play.
Okay, is that do you play it with normal cards, or is this a special, like Uno, like a special set of cards?
Yeah, it's a special deck. It costs, I think, $8 to $9 online. You can order it, and I believe it's a Mennonite card game.
Interesting.
Which doesn't sound like fun, but it is.
But it is. Blast. Katie, thanks. Dutch Blitz, I haven't heard of, but card games, that's I played Pinochle and Euchre growing up. That's a whole other angle we didn't get into, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, my family sits down and plays Speed Solitaire with each other as a multi-handed thing. My mother will actually try to break fingers if getting her way. She's very, very competitive about it.
Time for one more quick call. Jerry in Madison. Jerry, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your game?
Lately, probably the last few years, I've been really... really enjoying playing Cosmic Encounters.
Oh, yeah.
Due to the variable player powers, and one game you pick a character and it'll force you to play a really aggressive game, and the next game you'll pick a character that makes you want to purposely tank hands of cards. And
Jerry, thank you. We're just about out of time. Cosmic Encounter is a great one. Matt, just a few seconds left. What's next on your game table?
Well, we just picked up a bunch of games over here at Gen Con. We got a new game from the guys who did Cards Against Humanity called Secret Hitler. We've got a friend of mine who just published a new game called Phoenix Command. A buddy of mine named John Wick just came out with 7C as a new version of his 20-year-old role-playing game. And just anything else we can get our hands on. We also got new versions of Munchkin to play that we played at the convention as well at Gen Con over the weekend.
So many
tons
games.
Tons of fun.
So many games, so little time. Matt, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
That's Matt Forbeck. He's an award-winning and New York Times bestselling author and game designer based in Beloit. We've been talking about how games from Twister to Pokemon Go to Monopoly change and reflect the times. Share yours at the Central Time Facebook page.